Hello, everyone. This is episode 41 of the iPhone Podcast. For show notes and to send us feedback, please visit theiphonepodcast.com. Once again, I'm your host, Gary Ng from iPhoneinCanada.ca, and I'm here alongside Justin Louis to record episode 41. Hey, Justin, how you doing?
I'm very good. I'm a little more worried how you are. We were supposed to record Thursday night, and I was looking forward to teasing you a little bit about your team there, and next thing I know, you guys are burning your city to the ground. So is everything back to normal now?
Everything is relatively back to normal. It's sad that, you know, a small number of individuals who chose to participate made, you know, Vancouver and pretty much Canada look like a bunch of idiots. So, yeah, note to people listening out there, if your team happens to lose Game 7 of the Stanley Cup Finals, note to you, do not burn down your own city.
Yes, and it's I've always thought it weird in the U.S. when teams win, they burn down the city. That's dumb. But when you lose and it's not even a party or anything, down your own city, it's even dumber. And yeah, we don't even have to discuss the several hundred or several thousand idiots who caused it. But note to the other people too, you might not want to have your buddies taking pictures of you setting cars on fire and then putting them on Facebook, or walking into the bay and coming out with a toaster and mugging for the camera. I've never seen a group of dumber people in my life. I don't know if it's just that's the kind of people who attract, or in that situation, people just go brain dead. But I do hope all these Facebook pages end up getting to the police and some of these people end up being charged. Dumb enough to go steal a toaster from the bay, but even dumber to mug for the camera and post it to Facebook.
Well, a lot of the people that were caught, some of the ones that I've read about, they didn't even live in the downtown core. They lived outside of Vancouver in the suburbs. And, you know, they were stupid enough to get involved. There's this one scene where the London Drugs, which is sort of a retail store here, their flagship location downtown has like security bars and like extra strong glass. And basically the CEO went on, like, eventually the rioters or the people who tried to break in, it took them 2 hours to break into the store. And when they did get into the store, it's funny, their news report is like, and people are leaving, and you can hear someone, like, someone's walking out with a can of Pringles, and then there's someone else walking out with an umbrella. It's funny.
We should keep the show on somewhat on topic. Did the Apple store get broken into?
No, because the Apple store is inside a mall, so okay. The mall wasn't breached or anything, but
thank God for that.
yes, thank God.
And this topic isn't exactly iPhone related, but it is social media related. Vancouver got a lot of coverage the last week, and not only just kind of the riot, you had that couple supposedly kissing on the ground. It's funny how these things go now. And from the Canadian angle, we're sort of such this nondescript country. We're never in the news for doing anything particularly bad or particularly interesting. And it's always these type of things where we suddenly get the big media coverage. So I'm sure the NHL was happy in one way to finally have a Canadian team sort of back in it with a chance to win. But then, of course, the coverage we get afterwards makes us look like we're just a bunch of hockey hooligans, almost sort of like the soccer people in Europe.
Yeah. It's crazy because some of those car fires, they melted a few igloos downtown, so that wasn't very good.
No. Yeah. People have nowhere to live now.
Exactly. Anyways, that's a great segue into some of the news and apps that we are going to talk about this week on episode 41. We did miss 1 week. That's basically, we had some scheduling conflicts, but we're back up and running. So here we go. Let's get started. Top story here that we were talking about, Apple has reversed their course towards the in-app purchases. They've changed their guidelines on the pricing of in-app subscriptions on the App Store. There's no longer any requirement that a subscription be the same price or less than it is offered outside the app. There's a deadline for all apps to adhere to these new rules. So basically this new guideline that they've added in, it basically lets us know that apps such as Netflix, other similar apps with a subscription model, they will be allowed to stay in the App Store.
This is a very smart move from Apple. the coverage of this story hasn't been good when it was first announced, and even now, there's so many misconceptions. I read a couple different articles that said, even though Apple made this smart move, they were still saying, oh, well, it's stupid that Apple won't let people buy the books or the subscriptions right within the app. Well, that was never allowed. If you've ever used the Kindle app, you could go on to Amazon.com, buy a book, and then sync it to your device, but you could never buy it right in the app, and now you still can't. I think that's fair. Apple's initial policy, I understood where they were coming from. You've provided this app. You have this incredible platform. You have this huge number of people, customers with credit cards on file. It doesn't seem outrageous for Apple to want some of that money, but to force 30%, people like Amazon, some of these other small book publishers, they don't even have the money available to pay Apple that 30%. So I think Apple's made the smart move here. Let them do it outside the app if they want, but you still can't purchase right within the app. And my prediction for this story is a year from now, 95% of these type of apps will have in-app purchasing and in-app subscriptions and will gladly pay Apple the 30% because they'll find that the sales in that way are much better. There's a lot of people who have their credit cards on file with Apple. They trust Apple. Younger people getting gift cards. There's a new promotion this week that you get a $100 gift card from Apple. People want to spend that money as well. So I know for a fact there'll be people who, I don't want to give my credit card to Amazon. I don't want to bother giving my credit card to Netflix. And if they could use their current system they're already using with Apple, they would. So smart move by Apple. Don't put up these barriers. Don't get the bad press over it. But a year from now, I think Apple will get what they wanted in the long run. And most people will switch over to this other thing because they'll realize even paying that 30% makes sense financially when you increase your subscriptions by that number.
Oh, definitely. I think the last thing any company wants is to be left out of the pie. Everyone wants to get a piece of the pie, even if that, like you said, if it's going to cost them 30%, sure. That's the cost of playing in the Apple ecosystem, and the dividends can be quite a lot compared to, that 30% charge.
Yeah.
Moving on here, Apple has stepped in and files a motion to intervene in the Lodsys patent lawsuit. They filed a motion to intervene in the patent infringement lawsuit that Lodsys had slapped on 7 iOS developers a while back. The company has maintained that its license for Lodsys patents allows developers to use in-app purchases, and it has the right to intervene on them on the behalf of developers. Apple is, according to Florian Mueller on his blog Foss Patents, he's saying that Apple is going to focus on the theory of exhaustion, which is basically saying Lodsys can't get paid twice for a licensed use of the patents that are in question. Apple is stepping in here to support its developers, and I think this is a fantastic story. I mean, they're not going to let them hang out to dry, due to Lodsys and their claims. And I think this is a great story that will keep developers loyal to Apple, knowing that, if someone wants to go after them over some sort of patent infringement, Apple is going to step up.
Yeah, that's probably the best part. I love that Apple did this. You notice every time, every keynote, every kind of public thing Apple does, they're always mentioning how much they paid their developers. They're always getting their developers early access to all their stuff. Apple really, I think they've always treated their developers pretty well, but they're going above and beyond now because they realize how important they are to the platform. I'm so glad this happened, because I don't like these kind of patents. I'm not a lawyer by any means, but you shouldn't really be able to get paid twice on this. And I do think that Lodsys is going to regret taking this standpoint. They should have just gone after other companies like Apple to get an overall license. Apple's going to go after them hard here. Most lawyers I've heard discuss the topic seem to think Apple has a pretty good case here. And there's other companies now. There's two more lawsuits that have sprung up out of this. Two different companies are trying to invalidate Lodsys's patent. So I think it would just be great if this company tried to bully small developers and as a result, not only get their ass handed to them by Apple, end up maybe even losing the patent because of this. That would be nice.
Yeah, Apple in their latest keynote At WWDC, they did mention that, you know, they've had $2.5 billion paid out to developers. I mean, yeah, you don't want to mess with Apple's legal team. They have some of the best and the brightest lawyers. I mean, when they want something, they get it done. There's no question.
Yes.
Yeah. So moving on here, we have Nuance dictation. Details were discovered in some iOS 5 internal settings. Just before the keynote, we heard rumors of Nuance integration in iOS 5. People are talking about how, you know, I think TechCrunch had a story talking about how there's going to be a full, I don't know, some sort of, what am I trying to say here? Some sort of dictation system built into the iOS. However, after everything was all said and done, we didn't see anything. Some screenshots have cropped up on the web a while ago. That was from Chronic Wire and Sunny Dixon, basically showing clear evidence that new dictation details are right there within iOS 5. Scobalizer, he had a scoop, according to his sources, who also gave him the inside scoop on Twitter being integrated into iOS 5 before the keynote. Those same sources said that Nuance dictation just wasn't ready in time. We could see it coming soon, but it just didn't make it into that preview or maybe even the final version of iOS 5.
I think this story is important for two reasons. A, I think dictation system-wide kind of audio input probably is important. Some people do like it on Android. I think Apple is feeling the heat a little bit from Android and wants to close any arguments for Android, so I wouldn't be surprised to see it. But I think it's also worth pointing out that iOS 5 is far from finished. If you remember, I think because of the time frames, some people are being confused. We used to see Apple come out in March or April, kind of preview the new iOS. Then they would come out in June at the developers conference, say, here's iOS again, here's the latest we're working on. They almost always announced a few new features and then said, oh, by the way, here's our new phone and it will be shipping with this new software next week or the week after. That same thing is going to happen this time. The dates are just differently. They skipped the March and April pre-release because the phone's obviously delayed. This June announcement we just saw a couple of weeks ago at WWDC, that was the preview. Then Steve Jobs is going to get up in September, say, here's what else we've done with iOS 5. Here's five new features we've added. And now, by the way, this version shipping next week or in 2 weeks when the new phone comes out. So I think there is a lot more to come in iOS 5, and people need to remember that. The whole time frame is bumped up a little bit.
Yeah, we've heard consistent rumors of a fall / September iPhone 5 or iPhone 4S, whatever you want to call it, launch. You know, it just so happens that iOS 5 is planning for a fall launch. It's, you know, it's pretty easy to just sort of link the two together that, you know, like you said, we're going to have a new phone. It's going to have, you know, maybe a slight hardware upgrade, and it's going to run iOS 5. And it's going to have, you know, some sort of new sort of voice feature, and it'll only be available to the iPhone 4 and this new iPhone. Come and buy it. So hard to say, but I mean, right now I would say with the features that have been released in iOS 5 that we've known about, I mean, it'll be pretty exciting to see what else they can conjure up for the final release.
Yeah, it's already impressive, but I can almost guarantee there will be some new things when they hit the stage in September to announce it.
Right. Next up, this is a pretty big story for our fellow American friends here. The iPhone 4 is now available in the USA from Apple, factory unlocked. So that means you can now buy an iPhone that's factory unlocked from Apple, which will allow you to pop in any carrier SIM card that uses micro SIM. So for example, people on AT&T, they'd be able to pop in the micro SIM from T-Mobile and use the phone. However, the data network runs on a different network, so you'd be limited to Edge. The prices for a 16 gigabyte unlocked iPhone 4 is $649, 32 gigabytes will run you $749. Now, the fine folks in Canada, we were lucky enough to get unlocked iPhones from Apple during last year's launch. I know a lot of other European countries also have unlocked, factory unlocked iPhones as well. I think this is fantastic. It just, you know, lets people have the freedom to use SIM cards whenever they're traveling and not be forced to, you know, do expensive roaming on voice or data.
It's very similar to the situation in Canada, except for we at least now have three or four carriers that use the exact same sort of system. In the US, this is basically interesting to the odd person who's willing to go with T-Mobile but have to have edge data, and people who are traveling. This really gets interesting in a few years when all those people who bought their original iPhones, these two-year contracts in the US and the three-year contracts in Canada, start to die off. Will we see a huge number of people want unlocked phones, and then will the carriers have to be forced to then try to attract people? That's the ideal. If everyone or a significant number of people had unlocked iPhones, and Rogers and Bell or AT&T, whoever it is, realized, hey, we can no longer suck these people in for 3 years based on us subsidizing the phone, we now have to make the experience and the pricing better, that will be interesting. As I've mentioned before on the show, unless you're traveling, you still have a pretty big incentive to sign that contract, because getting that $500 off on the phone, you can't make that up on savings on the plans, because all the plans are the same anyways. In Europe, you see incredibly cheaper plans when you're not subsidizing a phone. So hopefully we'll start to see that in North America, but I still think you won't see a huge push to that for a few years when the carriers start to lose these people. Because even you probably right now, you bought your unlocked phone, which is great for when you travel, great for when you go to resell it, but you're probably still on a contract from your original iPhone. Once you're out of that, it'll be interested to see how the carriers react to that and if they get aggressive with the pricing to try to earn customers.
Yeah, and I think it's, for me, it's personally, I just don't want to sign another contract with the carriers over the length of 3 years. I just don't want to be tied down and have to deal with any changes they make. It's just a sort of a personal choice. And at the same time, I have an unlocked iPhone, which is great. But I think the other side of this story about the unlocked iPhone in the States is this is going to allow Apple to sell so many more phones to people who are scalpers that will be exporting these phones outside of the US. There are so many countries around the world that don't have iPhones, and to get them unlocked is basically a coveted item. And now that you can get them unlocked from the States, it's just another channel for people to buy more iPhones and to just get them into hands of others around the States. I mean, I can imagine so many more of these will be showing up on eBay. So, yeah.
Exactly. And it's just one more power play from Apple. When the iPhone was announced originally, nobody could believe the kind of power Apple had. Apple was the first manufacturer ever to go into a company. AT&T was the first one, and get all these terms that other people couldn't. You look at even Android, as powerful as Google is, they're still constantly having the manufacturers and the carriers dictate terms, not allow people to upgrade. We're not going to allow this feature. This Apple has already had the most power, and this just gives them even more power. So now if you're Rogers, you're AT&T, you're whoever around the world, you either play ball with Apple or they'll just unlock their phones and find carriers who will. And if you're really not careful, they'll just keep doing things like iMessages to further and further make the carrier less important.
Yeah. For people who have tested out iMessage, the experience is incredibly seamless. The system detects when another person has iOS 5 and you'll just automatically begin iMessaging that person. Speaking, you know, iMessage is, you know, known as the quote unquote BBM killer, but I don't think it is a BBM killer. I think the only thing killing BBM and RIM is the company itself, because this week it had one of the largest dives in the history of its stock. Just to move on to talk about the iPad and the Playbook. Playbook numbers were revealed they had about 500,000 units shipped, but this, but the number of actual units that were sold were not revealed by RIM. So, you know, the playbook was supposed to have, you know, the full web flash and all that jazz, but it appears RIM is going through some real tough waters right now, and reality is sinking in that they need to make some drastic changes to appeal to consumers and not just focus on hardware upgrades, but to really get some great software going to rival iOS and Android.
Yeah, they're in big trouble because they're feeling the heat from two directions. Their products are not near as good as they used to be. They're not, definitely aren't as compelling to consumers. The industry has sort of passed them by. And then people no longer even have confidence in their CEO or any of that stuff. Even after that press conference, I saw a few clips of it, and they're just joking around and trying to be cocky, and people don't buy that. There was that story about one of their largest investors dumping all the stock. They need to fix things in a hurry. You want to talk about resting on your laurels. That is a company that nailed mobile email before anyone else. If you remember back then, you couldn't really get email on your phone properly because not only were the phones not well equipped, but the service wasn't equipped. So along came the BlackBerry that not only gave you a device with a keyboard and a decent screen to do the email, but they also provided that BlackBerry email and BBM eventually, they actually provided the infrastructure. Well, now that's not compelling anymore because Google IMAP service on their Gmail, a free service, works as good as BlackBerry email. Even subpar emails like Yahoo and Hotmail and these other ones have done a pretty good job with mobile sync. And now the devices, iPhone and Android, have just left them in the dust. So they've now lost all the things that made them compelling. And then when the playbook came out, you would have thought that they would, hey, here's this device. It's really well integrated with all our stuff that has made us successful in the past. No, they tried to take a whole new approach. They ship a device that doesn't even have the BlackBerry email and BBM and that stuff. And when you only ship 500,000, that means you probably only have sold a couple hundred thousand, or you denounce that number. So that's a dreadful number. Their phone sales are way down. If they don't come up with a compelling product pretty soon, they could be almost done for.
Yeah, it's you know, as much as I love to support Canadian companies, it's quite sad that you know, their upper management hasn't realized that they need to basically follow the competition and not just talk about how great their devices are. It's crazy if you take a look at any recent sort of 5-day or, you know, 7-day chart of the stock price. There's a massive dip as of the last trading day. The stock price has dropped over almost 21%, which is just crazy.
It's insane, and it's not going to get better because, as I said, every reason you bought a BlackBerry is gone now. The one thing I didn't mention a second ago is the other thing that got them a lot of sales was it was really a business-related product. But then they realized, hey, everyday people want a text message. We started to see email and text messaging take off in a way that it hadn't previously. So they were smart at the time to start doing those cheaper BlackBerries. And you could get BlackBerries for free on contract. And then they had these things where you could get family plans, buy one, get one free, buy two, get two free. And that really drove sales to then you saw little kids walking around with BlackBerries. You saw just regular people. It was no longer a business device, but then along comes the iPhone, suddenly available at a cheap price on contract. Android phones, really cheap. There's all kinds of cheaper models that you can even start to get for free now. So all their advantages are gone. Nobody really cares about their email unless you're a big time business customer and your business still feels more comfortable dealing with their security, or it's a legacy system that you're already using them. Unless you're that, there's just no compelling reason. And now that, and then you heard that one little bit, that small group of people who was like, I'm going to stick with it because BBM is so good. I can text my friends for free and it's a really great system. Well, Apple's about to introduce a competing product. Google's about to, they'll lose that advantage too. So they better come up. They better compete with Google and Apple or figure out a way to double down back on business. Or as I said before, they're in big trouble.
Yeah, I mean, if you just take a look back to the beginning of the year in January, their stock price was at $64. Now it's below, more than half of that is gone. So, I mean, I hope they can come up with some new ways of, you know, making their software more compelling. But I just think that, you know, the impact of the iPhone and iOS and the iPad, that just shows that, you know, how it can destroy, you know, a company and basically get, if you don't keep up, you're going to be left behind. And I think RIM is a fantastic example of, you know, iOS taking over.
And not to go on and on and on with this, but when Steve Jobs did that keynote for the very first iPhone, he very boldly and very correctly, it turns out, said, this device is 5 years ahead of its time. And Google, around that time, had either just bought or was in the process of buying the company that would become Android. That, if you remember that device, you saw those early prototypes, the early mock-ups of the system, the way they had integrated email and text and everything. It was a BlackBerry clone that Google was smart enough that moment to say, we're no longer competing with BlackBerry, we're competing with the iPhone. Even though the iPhone was new and unproven, they saw the writing on the wall. They agreed with Steve Jobs that it was 5 years ahead of the curve, and they built on it. And now if you look at Android, that five-year head start that Steve Jobs said he had is about to end, and Android, still in my opinion, nowhere near close, but feature to feature, very close. It's at least in the conversation, and BlackBerry's not. That proves Google saw it, took it seriously, started adapting. BlackBerry didn't, thought, hey, there's still going to be a market for the way we do things. They were wrong, and now they better turn around things quick because they don't have another 5 years to catch up. If they won't last 5 years.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's crazy how, you know, it's that 5 years is coming up and RIM doesn't have anything that would even match, you know, iOS right now or even Android. But let's move on to some other news. That was a little RIM rant that I think I sort of sucked you in on.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, JCPenney nabs Apple's head of retail to become its new chief executive. Ron Johnson, who is basically the former head of Apple's retail operations, he helped bring the Apple stores to, you know, the success that we've seen today. He's left Apple and he's the new president and CEO of JCPenney. Johnson has been with Apple, you know, since he helped open the first store 10 years ago. He's now planning to take JCPenney on and turn them around. Basically, he, you know, the man who has created the Apple Store experience has left Apple.
This is bad news for Apple. This guy's obviously a retail genius. It's great news for JCPenney. But I think this story's sort of being overplayed in the media. You're suddenly seeing all these articles kind of crop up saying that there's a brain drain in Apple. All these people are jumping ship. And when you see large numbers of people start to leave a company, it's usually for one of two reasons. The company's either in big trouble and they sense it ahead of time and they get out, or in this case, which I think it is the case with Apple, it's because Apple's so successful right now that these people are in huge demand. A guy like this is never going to be CEO of Apple. Steve is going to be the CEO for as long as he wants to be, and then this guy's not going to be the next guy in place. That's the one problem with Apple. There's not a lot of upward mobility if you want something like this. This guy was clear in his statement that he dreamt of being a CEO in this type of situation. So he got a ton of money for doing it. The hundreds of millions that he's cashed out of Apple over the years, money's obviously not an issue for him. So I don't believe there's a brain drain at Apple from the sense that the company's in trouble or people don't like the way the company's going. It's the exact opposite. The company's going so well that the people who can claim some of that success are now rock stars in the industry and then can get huge jobs other places. And then, like I said, in this case, this guy's not going to ever be the CEO of Apple. So now he gets his chance to be the top guy.
Yeah, he's basically built the skeleton and the model of the Apple Store and all of the concepts that we know that about what makes an Apple Store so great today. I think, you know, Apple even said, you know, they wish him well in his new endeavors. I mean, but it is a big hit because, you know, the Apple Store is part of Apple's success. I mean, people line up outside of these stores overnight to get products. I mean, it's incredible. And, you know, Apple stores are basically, you know, the world's most profitable per square foot. When you, if you put that to dollars, it's like over $5,000 per square foot of profit. And that's unbelievable.
Yeah, it's the best retail experience in the business. Huge get for JCPenney, but I think at the same time, Apple will be fine. They've learned a lot from this guy. He's got people working underneath him. I think they'll continue to build on what he came up with, and I don't think there's any reason to think that Apple's retail experience will decline in any way.
Yeah, we'll just have to wait and see. Moving on here, Google Sync improves three new features in for iOS. They improve iOS email. You can now have searching of messages on the server right on your phone instead of just the messages stored locally. There's been improved calendar support, and you can now send emails using the alias feature built into the Mail app. Basically, this is a feature I've been waiting for the longest time, and that's being able to have server email searching right on my phone. Previously, I'd have to go into the web app, which, you know, wasn't difficult, but it just took that one extra step.
Well, to me, the searching on the server was the one problem with the iOS email, and I was never quite sure if it was a problem with Apple or a problem with Google, because Apple had the feature to say search on the server and you just never got any results. And then at the keynote, Apple said that they've improved that themselves. So then I took that to mean, okay, this wasn't Google's fault. This was Apple's fault. They've now fixed it. And then a day or two later, Google fixes it and it's even working now in iOS 4. So this whole time I was starting to think maybe it was Apple's fault. It was actually Google's fault. Far as I'm concerned, the Google email is the best in the business. I manage email for 30 or 40 local businesses, clients of mine. I always recommend getting their own domain, but hosting it with Google Apps. There's, far as I'm concerned, no more reliable system, no better system. It's free. You may have to pay someone if you don't know how to do it to get it set up. But then again, if a little tip for people, don't go out to a web designer or anybody and pay a lot of money for this, because it's a free service up to 10 users. And it's so good. This was the one issue with it. And now that they fixed this, it's, to me, the ultimate email thing. And I will point out that if you're using IMAP, I think you have to sync the folders, all the different folders, if you want to be able to search. That's the only one little change. I had to, for me to get it to work properly, I had to go sync the other folders as well.
Mm. Did you, the thing is, there's the default mail setup for Gmail on iOS, and that's just IMAP. If you want push, you need to set up an account through Exchange, the Exchange option. So which one have you set up yours with?
Oh, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. If you set it up just through the Gmail, as Gary mentioned, it'll be a breeze to set up. I think it does default to IMAP. Your email will stay in sync and you'll be able to use this email, but you won't get the push emails, Gary said. I have it set up using the Microsoft Exchange setup to set up the push, and it will still work with the search, but there's a little option in there that says folders to sync. And previously I had only been syncing my inbox. I had to select some of those other folders if you wanted to be able to search them. But if you select them, then you can search those other folders.
Yeah, that's the same issue that I ran into before. That's something that Google just didn't bought. I guess, you know, they didn't make it obvious enough for people to notice, because I had, for the longest time, I had my Exchange account on there and I couldn't find certain labels wouldn't load. And I'm like, what the? Finally, I discovered that you had to tick off the any labels or folders that you want pushed and synced. So that's a little tip for people out there.
Yeah. Even in Google settings, you have to go. For some reason, even in the Gmail settings now, they've disabled IMAP on individual folders. You can actually go into your Gmail settings now and pick which folders you want to have working with IMAP. So I guess they've kind of overly complicated it, but at the same time, it gives you full control. And if you followed everything we just said, you'll have great email working. And if for some reason you couldn't follow, just email me, justin@theiphonepodcast.com, and I'll send you in the right direction.
Right on. Here's a story here. The New York Post website is now blocking Safari access on Apple's iPad. The New York Post has set up a new paywall targeting mobile Safari users on the iPad, directing them to download the publication's app through the App Store. Content on the website for the New York Post is no longer available to iPad users outside of the official app. So if you go to newyorkpost.com in Safari on your iPad, you'll just get a landing page that will tell you to go to the App Store. Nice work, New York Post. Now, yeah. That's a way to get people to download your app or just sort of be angry at you.
I stick a story like this in every week. We should probably just make this a regular segment, call it like Brain Dead Content Owners Weekly or something. I don't know when these companies are going to realize restricting access is never going to work. Clever people who really want your content for free and don't want to subscribe to your app are just going to use iCab or iChromie or one of these 20 other browsers we've talked about on the podcast. I tested it on iCab. I tested it on iChromie. It loads just fine. Even if they start trying to block these other user agents, iCab, for instance, allows you to trick your user agent. So, for instance, you can go into the iCab settings and say, tell every website I go to that I'm actually on Safari on a Mac so you can get the full version. I do that so I can not have to screw around getting the mobile versions of different Google stuff. I just get the legit page every single time, and New York Times works just fine with that. I have no problem with the company putting up a paywall. I totally respect that, but you have to stop fragmenting your market. If I can read it for free on my Mac, I should be able to read it for free on my iPad. You can't manipulate the audience and say, oh, we know you have this device. That isn't a winning strategy long run. In the long term, clever people will work around it and you'll never have any chance of getting their money. And people who can't be bothered and don't want to pay for your app, you're going to lose the ad revenue. You're going to lose the page views because people will just train themselves to think, oh, that story's from New York Post. Forget it. Their page is blocked. I'm not even going to go to it. It's similar to, as I've mentioned before, Lifehacker and some of these blogs who have these really weird these hash bang links now that don't go right to the article. I just don't click on their stories anymore. I see they're listing in a newsreader and I just skip by it. I'm like, I'm not going to track down that article. Somebody else, if it's important, somebody else will be covering it.
Yeah, it's definitely not a great way to reach out to your users when they know that they can't access your content. Moving on here, Apple's annual back-to-school promo is now live in Canada and the USA, but there's a twist this time. There's no longer a rebate for a free iPod Touch. You will get an $100 iTunes gift card that you'll be able to use in the Mac App Store and the regular App Store. A lot of people see this as sort of a raw deal because, obviously, a free iPod Touch is worth more than a gift card. But, I mean, I'm still happy that Apple is giving out promo. I mean, if you actually do buy apps, that's still $100 in your pocket. Sure, it's not an iPod, but, you know, the iPod seems to be phasing itself out right now.
I think it's a mixed bag because I'm sure there are people who are disappointed. The value isn't quite the same. The iPod Touch was around $200. Now you're only getting $100. There was probably people really looking forward to getting a new iPod Touch. But at the same time, I know several people who last year at the back-to-school event got the deal, got the iPod Touches, and then had to figure out what to do with them, had to sell them or give them away as gifts or something because they had already had one or had no interest in it. So from that standpoint, maybe it takes a little bit of a hit if people perceive the value to be less. But I think people will really enjoy getting the gift card. If they haven't used the Mac App Store, they're going to be pleasantly surprised how well it works, how cheap the apps are, how good the apps are. And it's a smart move from Apple because, again, it's going to be another way to drive people to that app store. I know a lot of people who never bought a lot of software, tried the app store a few times, paid the 99 cents, say, for FaceTime, and then loved how easy it was to buy it, how it updated automatically, and now look to buy more apps. So from that standpoint, it's a smart move from Apple and not something you're going to get buying any other computer. Now, if you're looking for a school present or something for your kids for back to school, Apple comes with a lot of great software. You're getting iLife for free. And now you can use that $100 coupon to say, go in and buy Pages and Keynote and those. They're $20 a pop. Aperture from Apple is only $80. There's amazing photo programs that I've mentioned before, like Pixelmator or Acorn. So it's a great deal. And I know if I was buying one, I prefer to have the gift card, actually, because I don't need an iPod Touch having the iPhone. But
oh, totally. I mean, this saves you the hassle of selling your iPod Touch to get the money. Why not just use that towards apps?
Yeah.
Next up, we're going to touch on this story here. Here we had a story about the Cupertino City Council at one of their annual council meetings. They had Steve Jobs show up himself to present plans for a new Apple campus. What makes this story interesting is that the council only had a short notice that Steve was coming himself. Steve has come and presented plans or proposals himself before. As always, it's, you know, it's a surprise visit, and it's just hilarious seeing Steve interact with the Cupertino City Council, telling them his plans for a large new campus built on the former HP land that Apple had purchased. This is a new massive campus that will house almost over 12,000 employees, super futuristic design, really green. And yeah, I mean, when your single biggest taxpayer shows up and says, we are going to do this, it's your job to say yes. And what else do you want?
Yeah, I think the most fascinating thing for me was, A, you thought you were watching an Apple keynote. Steve Jobs always sounds like he's pitching things. So it was like full keynote mode, but talking about the Apple campus. And the other thing it proved is how good, like just how smart and how good of a talker he is. You could easily sort of trick yourself into thinking, well, Steve Jobs is great, but he's practiced those keynotes 5,000 times. Well, he couldn't practice the questions he was going to get and just nailed those people. Like when the person asked if they were going to give free Wi-Fi or anything else, just to say, oh, I'm old fashioned, I believe we pay the taxes and you do that stuff, so you can do it. Or if you want to let us not pay taxes, then I'll give you free Wi-Fi. That was just classic Steve, and it was funny to watch.
Yeah, he definitely made his point across in a dramatic fashion, talking about old stories and anecdotes, and it was just fun to watch. Moving on, though, we're going to talk about some app news. Here we have Galaga, the 30th collection.
Yeah, this is a big one for me. I love this game. Most of you probably have heard about it, but if you haven't, if you go to the App Store, it's Galaga, G-A-L-A-G-A. You'll recognize it right away. It's the little starship that you go left to right at the bottom and shoot the different people coming down at you. This game was already available for the iPhone, but this is the 30th anniversary edition. It's universal, so it works on the iPad. It's not only Galaga, but it's about five or six games. It's remixes. It's the 87 version. I don't have it all in front of me, but it has five or six different versions. You can download it for free, get the one version for free, and then the other versions are available as in-app purchases, anywhere from $1.99 to $2.99 each. And then there's something like a $7.99 to unlock all the games. Plays really well. I really like it on the iPad. If you've seen the iCade device from ThinkGeek, this would be perfect for it. It's the iPad screen is just perfect for this. Has really good controls. It even has this new control scheme that they haven't had before, where you can just kind of almost finger tap around the fighter to move it around instead of a fake joystick. Really like the game. My only little nitpick is, and I'm starting to see this with more and more apps, and I hope this isn't a trend because I don't think it's a winning proposition for them. You're starting to see games give away themselves for free and then expect you to buy it further for the in-app purchase, which I have no problem with that, but the pricing of the in-app purchases isn't that great. To me, if this app was, say, $4.99, I think it would sell like crazy. They could do the odd 99-cent, $1.99 sale, but instead they give it to you for free, and then it becomes $7.99 to unlock it, which I think is a little expensive for this type of game, just for an old arcade 20, 30-year-old. Well, I know it's 30 years old,
yeah.
30-year-old game, not worth $7.99. So that's the only thing I'd like to see them improve. But otherwise, worth downloading for free, whether you're a fan of the game or not.
Yeah, I remember playing Galaga when I was a lot younger and at arcades. I mean, this is a classic game. I mean, yeah, you know, offer it free, but they're going to get you with that in-app purchase.
But it is worth pointing out, the one game you do get for free, it's not like you just play a couple levels and then it locks up. It is the full version of, and the cool thing is, it's a different version than they used to sell on the iPhone. It isn't Galaga, it's Galaga 2 or Galaga 87. It's a different version, and it's actually a version that I hadn't really played much, so it was cool to play that, and I still have the original on my iPhone, but unfortunately, they never made that version available for iPad.
Hmm. Next up here, we have a social networking app called Pictu.
Yeah, this is another app that I feel there's just too many of these type of apps, so I don't know if it can have a level of success. You posted on the blog, I think, yesterday, this funny infographic about which photo service to choose. It just seems like there's a new one every day, and people just can't keep signing up for all these things. But the thing that I really like about this Pictu is it's very similar to Path. I think they kind of copied Path in a lot of ways for the, kind of the elegance of the app. It's a really nice looking app, but they're trying to solve the problem of having too many friends or not having enough friends in these apps. That this whole app, the premise is it's a conversation with pictures. So when you launch the app, it's here's the hot topics, and it says, show us your home screen or show us your watch. So it's threads that you don't, the app, you don't even, you, I think you can follow people, but you can't really, there's almost no way to find your actual friends on this. It's actually about just sharing with the community in large. So when it says, show us your app screen, they want you to take a picture of your home screen and enjoy the conversation that way, which I thought was actually a clever take on all this, because I know some people have a lot of friends on these services and it drives them nuts getting bombarded by the constant updates. It's overwhelming. It's overwhelming.
Yeah. Your Instagram timeline is just exactly out of control.
But then there's the people on the other side of it who are like, hey, my friends aren't into this stuff, or my family's not into this stuff, so I join Instagram and I have one friend, so it's no fun. This takes that element out of it, and as long as you're willing to share these pictures, and most of it isn't stuff that you have to worry about your privacy. Who cares about showing your home screen and things like that? So it's actually a fun community. There's three or four threads in that. One show your Apple products, one show your home screen, another one was like show your watch, and then I think it was like cool t-shirts or something. There's three or four that I thought was interesting, and I actually did get sucked into it. I added my picture, and then you get the updates for other people sharing that stuff. So really well made app, and I at least give them the props for trying a different thing, trying to deal with some of those fatigue issues and those discoverability issues these other apps have. But I'm still afraid that most people are just going to look at that and go, oh God, another one of these apps. So I don't know what it's going to be long term. I still think eventually there's going to have to be some type of API or something that these guys can all talk together. Because you're not going to, it's one thing to get somebody to commit to one or two apps to share this stuff. Nobody wants to have 27 apps on their phone. And when they take a picture, they think, oh, which one should I share this on? Or it's just, it's neat, but it's not very feasible the way it's working right now.
Yeah, it's out of control. But I do like the concept behind Pictu, is how, you know, it's like sort of a, you reply with a picture. And do you need to register to get started? Or
I don't even think you have to register. I did it right when it came out, and I don't remember now, but if you have to register, it's something very basic, like put in your email or something. But the funny thing about this app is you can't even follow your friends even if you want to. I cannot figure out a way to, it doesn't have the search by Facebook or search by email. So you can follow people you discover from within the app. So if somebody's sharing a bunch of cool stuff you like, you can sort of favorite them. But I didn't find any way that you could find your actual friends unless you just happen to recognize them. And just if you happen to do a picture of your home screen, yeah, and I caught it. So it's a whole different take, and it's pretty interesting.
It almost reminds me of Pinterest. Have you heard of Pinterest?
No, I hadn't tried that one.
Pinterest is another app/website where my wife is all over it. You can just, you pin interesting pictures that you like based on a certain category. And then when you click on that category, you can see this similar pictures posted by others about things that they like in that same category. But this is neat how it's like kind of asking a question. People are posting pictures here. So it's just, yeah, I mean, there's so many of these social picture sharing apps. It's just bizarre. But moving on to the next app here, Evernote Peak. This is a pretty interesting iPad app.
As far as I'm concerned, this is the app of the week. I don't know how interesting it's going to be or how useful for most people, but leave it. It's certainly the most unique app I've seen in a long time. And basically what Evernote Peak does is an app that will only work on the iPad 2 with a smart cover. And basically you use your Evernote account to build a question and an answer. And then you can use it sort of like as a flashcard system if you're studying for something. So you just open that first fold of your smart cover. It's in perfect line with the box in the app, and it will have a question. What's this? What's that? Something, or you don't have to use it for questions. If you could think of some other way, but you just, it's supposed to be a hint or a question. And then you open the app all the way and you can see the rest of the thing. So it would be perfect for trying to quiz yourself for a test. I haven't thought of any other need for it right now outside of that, but very clever for an app to take advantage of the smart cover and to have it just easily connected to your Evernote account. So you can easily add content.
Yeah, this is an amazing idea. I don't think anyone ever would ever have thought of implementing something like this. So good on the Evernote guys for doing this.
And if teachers were smart, like if your kid had a really clever teacher, they could open an Evernote account, create a study guide for their students, and then share it through Evernote. Now, I guess at this point, it wouldn't be that interesting because there'd probably be like one kid in the class who had an iPad 2. But if it was one of those schools that were giving out iPad 2s, or as the iPad continues to be such a big thing, or say in a university where more people would have it, it's a pretty ingenious use of the cover.
Yeah, it's really cool. Next up, we have one. How do you pronounce this here? With?
Yeah, the icon is W/, like the short form for with, but it's called with. I should have actually put this up with the other one because it's yet again another photo sharing app. The twist on this one is it's created by Path, which we've all heard about over and over again. So instead of building this into Path, for some reason they thought, hey, let's to bring this out. And as much as Path got a bad rap because of all that money they got and didn't have that compelling of an app, I don't really use the app because I don't know anyone else using it, but I still think it's a very well done app. And I give them credit trying to do these unique apps. And this one, you talk about a niche app it's very limited in what it does. This app is literally designed to say, I'm out right now. I'm with this person. So the idea is you're out for dinner with someone. You take a picture of them, or you take a picture of the meal, or you take a picture of something and say, I'm with so-and-so, and here's the picture of it. For example, I did one just before we started recording, just so people could see it if they wanted. I put about to record the iPhone podcast with Gary Ng, and then take the picture with the app. It makes a nice timeline within the app. It uses your Twitter timeline. So when you're looking at the app, you can see other people who've shared with, but even people who haven't seen the app, everybody got a stream in their Twitter thing that said, Justin's recording with Gary and here's the picture sort of thing. So neat. Yeah, but again, that's pretty neat. Another one of these.
It's very niche, and it's sort of a limited use sort of thing, but it is a great idea.
And another app I'll just throw on here that I meant to add, I just realized I forgot, is Yahoo released an app this week called AppSpot, which is designed to help you discover apps. And I only put it in the show notes because I think it's very interesting that a big company like Yahoo that has had some troubles in the past is bringing out these apps to try to kind of reinvent who they are. It's a very well-made app. Very cool looking icon. It's one of those apps that you'll almost want to have on your home screen because it looks so well. But in practice, I don't find the app to be all that intriguing. Basically, you launch it and it takes a bunch of different things. Like I just launched it. It says today's picks, and then it says lifestyle, education, games, and it gives you three or four recommendations, and it has this neat almost slot machine interface where you do it that way. But unfortunately, I've looked through and they've recommended like 25 apps for me, and they're either apps that I already have or apps that aren't all that interesting. So well built, but not working all that great in practice. But again, it's free, so it's probably worth the download to check out. And somebody who doesn't spend all week trying to find these apps to then discuss on the show, someone who isn't on the App Store daily trying to figure this stuff out may actually find some good suggestions.
Yeah, I know Yahoo has a lot of different apps out there, so that's interesting that they would come up with an app finder app. Moving on here, let's talk about some updates. Tweetbot has been updated with pinboard support, picture support, and support for a new Twitter picture and login services. Here's something to note that iWork, Numbers, Pages, and Keynote for the iPhone, they've been updated with iCloud support. Other than that, any other big notable updates you could talk about here?
No, I just did want to say about the Numbers, Pages, and Keynote. I think that's a pretty huge update for that to suddenly work on the iPhone and to work with iCloud. I haven't used those apps in the past, but I think I'm going to try them soon, because being able to just quickly access documents on your iPhone is pretty compelling. I can't see on that size screen really working on a big document, but if you just suddenly on the go and need to make a quick change or send that to someone, now to have an app, if you got to look at it this way now. Numbers, Pages, and Keynote are $20 each on the Mac App Store, and they're $9.99 each on the iOS Store. So for $30 each, you're getting an app that you can now, with the iCloud service in the fall, are going to be able to have all your documents in one spot on your computer, on your iPad, and on your phone. So for $30 each, if you don't need them, or all three on all the devices for $90, when you think about what Office charges you, that's a pretty compelling product.
Oh, yeah. To have iCloud support, auto save all your documents available, that's a huge feature, especially when it's free. What about Google Docs? The only thing about Google Docs is I think the iOS interface is nice, but it still needs to be improved for editing and just, you know, the graphical user interface when you open it on iOS. I know it's a bit, it's not the best, let's say. Still runs like a website.
I feel I have mixed emotions when it comes to Google Docs. A, I use them on a daily basis, but I sort of use them begrudgingly. Syncing, the share feature, I do the show notes every week. I do them on my iPad. I do them in text, and then I add them to Google Docs so you and I can share them. And it's incredible that I can finish up the show notes, post them to Google Docs, send it over to you. You can then add stories, make changes, make notes for yourself. That's amazing. But I hate the interface. So I actually build the documents in another app and then upload them. I don't like their web interface. And I'm just for the first time experimenting with one of these third-party things, QuickOffice Pro for iPad. I'll have a full review for that at some point in the future. And I'm fairly impressed with that, the interface for that so far. But the rest I've tried have not been good. So to me, that's still the big mistake. Google needs to have either a native iOS app or really make the web app a lot better till it can compete with something like Pages or Keynote. But again, as a service, as something to sync and share, love Google Docs. But like everything with Google, their strength is the technology, the infrastructure, the ability to scale it, the ability to share it so easily. Interface, they have a long way to go.
Oh, totally. Okay, let's move on to some app picks. I have a couple here that I'm going to recommend. This one, it's called PayFirma. It's a free app to download, but it's basically the first mobile iPhone payment system that is specifically made to work for Canadians. It's the Square equivalent, but for Canada. So this is huge for merchants, entrepreneurs, people who are looking to accept credit card payments right on their iPhone, iPod Touch, and soon to come iPad. PayFirma is the app that will let you do that. I just checked out today. It's a really nice app. It's the company is based in Vancouver. You can email receipts right after the transactions are done. You just sign right on the screen. It's basically Square, but in Canada. I emailed the company asking what the price would be on their little card reader and what they would charge in terms of fees. But so far, they seem to be doing fairly well. They just signed on. a large real estate company to allow their technology to be used with realtors. So it's called PayFirma. They have a demo of the app available when you download it. Pretty neat.
So you did you just discover this app today with the rest of us, or have you been in on a beta or something like that?
No, I haven't been on a beta. I read about the app yesterday, and I just wrote the story today. But yeah, they had a press release that was released early, I think at the end of the week. So it's really interesting. I mean, it could be a big thing. A lot of, you know, there is no mobile payment system in Canada for the iPhone, and they're the first company to achieve that.
Well, I'm very excited about it, but also a little cautious just because I know a lot of the loopholes and the catches you find with Canadian companies in this regard. Not all the company's fault, government regulations, bank regulations, but from the moment I saw Square, I thought, hey, this is the future of business, and I hope we have something like this. I've emailed Square different times asking about their status in Canada, and they always just give you that stock answer. There's a lot of red tape. We're looking at it, but basically don't hold your breath. So again, this one, who knows what the fees will be? Who knows what kind of restrictions? Who knows what kind of possible credit checks or volume things? I hope it's something that just basically any Canadian over 18 or whatever the ages are can get and use fairly cheaply. I think that revolutionizes the way people do business. I know even from myself, being as involved in development as I am, dealing with small businesses all the time, I've had so many either ideas that I've worked on and worked on with people, or companies that have come to me and have not been able to get great businesses off the ground because of how hard it is to transact business in Canada. Up until very recently, to even accept credit cards, you could possibly have to pay tens of thousands of dollars in upfront security deposits, huge monthly fees, not very competitive percentages and things when you're a new business. So again, I'm cautiously optimistic. I hope there's not a bunch of catches, but if it's something similar to Square where almost anyone can just use, this is a game changer. And as we see this spread out to other countries, I think this is sort of the future of payments. Anybody, no matter how small, can take payments this way. It'll be great.
Yeah, pretty neat. And another app that I'm going to talk about here, it's called Pigshot. This app has been downloaded over 2 million times. It's a game where you launch a pig and it rolls up on the screen and you just tilt your phone left or right to sort of control the pig to steer it. Sounds silly. It's a bit addicting. I would recommend it for a download just if you're looking to waste some time.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't sound any sillier than Angry Birds. So you never know what a fun game could be called or what premise. So
yeah, and those are the couple picks that I have for this week.
Okay, I'm going to run through some things quick. Right off the bat, I haven't even played this, but I just want people to know about it. I hope it's still on sale by the time you read this. It's called Army of Darkness. It's getting really, really great reviews. I think it's normally $1.99 and then $2.99 on the iPad. It's free. It's based on the Sam Raimi, Bruce Campbell movie, which is one of my all-time favorite cult classics. So if the game even lives up to any of the potential of the movie, then that's great. Like I said, downloaded it, haven't even launched it yet, but you might as well grab it when it's free. Another free app that is really impressive, I'm not sure, I think it's only iPad only right now, but it's called iFixit, and it's basically a installation manual from the guys who do the iFixit website. If you don't know, they're the people who are always smashing up iPads or tearing iPads and iPhones apart to see what's inside them. They have a really slick app that you just pick your product, Mac, iPhone, iPad, but they also have PC stuff, auto stuff, home repair, and it's just this really amazing guide that it's sort of just like navigating their website looking for the guide, but then once you pick the article, it's a special version for the iPad where you can swipe and it's great. So whether you're working on your car or working on your computer, just to be able to have the iPad sitting right beside you with all these step-by-step instructions with big, beautiful pictures so you see exactly what you're looking at. Great app. I can't believe an app like that would be free, but it is. So that's worth checking out. another game that is on sale for 99 cents right now that I hope is still on sale, but if you missed it, it's Game Loft and it'll probably go on sale again soon, called Order and Chaos. And I think the reason I'm recommending this app is I haven't even played it that much and I'm not even that big a fan of this type of games, but it's basically World of Warcraft for the iPad. And I'm just amazed that a company can come up with an online game where there's hundreds of people online. The graphics look almost as good as World of Warcraft, and it's 99 cents to buy right now. And it, just like World of Warcraft, it has a monthly cost. It's I think 99 cents a month to play it after, but when you download it for 99 cents, you get 3 months free. So I recommend people pay the 99 cents, get 3 months free. If 3 months from now you're still enjoying the game, it's pretty reasonable. It's either 99 cents a month to play or like $2.99 for 6 months. So for $6 a year, which I think is half or a third of what World of Warcraft is for a month, you can play this big massive multiplayer game where, as far as I can tell, it's a pretty big world. I'm only really early into it, but it plays really well. It's got a decent community. There's obviously idiots on there, but it works, it works just like World of Warcraft. You're looking for gold, you're completing quests. And again, just to have an app, I'm impressed just that an app that large in scope can work so well on an iPad for that price. And I can tell you one thing, the World of Warcraft guys better be looking at this and considering it, because in some ways it's better than World of Warcraft. Like, there's so much crap you have to do with your mouse and keyboard on World of Warcraft. I'm not a huge World of Warcraft guy. A couple years ago, I played it for a few months just to finally test it out, and I enjoyed it. I just couldn't commit to the time sink that it is. But there's a lot of stuff you have to do with the keyboard and mouse that's not all that intuitive. To run it on your iPad and just be able to kind of touch everything really works well. It's another one of those games that... Some games, it's like, okay, this plays pretty good for the iPad. They did a decent job. This is the type of game, like Plants vs. Zombies, like Angry Birds, that was just made for that type of interface. And I keep saying iPad because that's how I've used it. But the same game, it is universal, so you can even play it on the iPhone. One other little caveat I should mention is, and I don't know why they would do this, except maybe just not to... to make people go broke, it's Wi-Fi only. You cannot use it over 3G. So even so, even if you have a 6 gig plan, which would be fine, at this point they don't even allow it. If you don't have a Wi-Fi connection, you just launch the game and you can look at your stats, but it says you need a Wi-Fi connection to play. So people looking to kind of play this type of game on the go, unfortunately you can't, unless you do the tethering trick like you can do with everything. If you want to tether it to your phone, you can do it that way, but it's Wi-Fi only at this point.
Right. Anyone who has a jailbroken iPhone, they can install My3G or any one of those other apps, little tweaks that will trick it into being on a Wi-Fi network. Very interesting. Anything else? One last pick?
Yeah, I'll do two things really quick. There's one app called Biblion, and it's actually spelled B-I-B-L-I-O-N, like bib, lion, but I guess it's a Greek word. It's pronounced Biblion, and it's by the New York Public Library, and it's a really slick free app all about the 1939 World's Fair, and it's part of an outreach by the New York Public Library. I think they call it Boundless Library or something, where they're trying to make as much of their archives available as they can online, and this app will just blow your mind how detailed it is. There's literally hundreds of different articles and sections about the World Fair, these amazing full screen pictures, in-depth articles. There was stuff that, I mean, I only spent about 20 minutes with it, and there was all kinds of things, this amazing, almost like keynote that Albert Einstein did, stuff that I didn't even know about the World's Fair. So I would say I would download it if you have any interest in the World's Fair, which is a pretty fascinating thing to begin with, or just to see what the New York Public Library is up to. It's an incredibly slick app for free, and they're already ahead of the curve compared to other libraries. So I like shining a spotlight anytime I can on people who are thinking outside of the box and not realizing that the internet's the future and that's how we need to go moving forward.
Yeah, that looks actually really cool to check out all this historical stuff from that era.
Yeah, and it sounds like this is just the first of many similar projects, so it's pretty incredible. And then the final other one that I had on my list that I'll just do really quick, this is a really niche app that's only going to, appeal to a small number of people, but if this is something you do, this is the app for you. It's called Noted, N-O-T-E-D, Noted. And the entire purpose of this app is to quickly type a message and email it to yourself. So if you're someone who does GTD or OmniFocus or something where you have this big elaborate system, you're not going to be interested. But a lot of people just send themselves reminders or keep track of what they need to do through their email inbox. And if you're one of those people, you're going to want this app, because as silly as it sounds, if you want to send yourself an email, you have to press the email icon, launches the email app, fill out who you're sending it to, yourself, fill out the subject, fill out this stuff, then hit send. This app totally takes all of that. You put your email in the options, so you never have to type your email again. It has a pre-formatted subject with the date and a nice square bracket, like noted in square brackets. So if you're using filters, you could automatically unearth this. And the biggest claim to fame is they say they've optimized how quick the keyboard launches. And if you ever notice certain apps, you'll launch it, you'll go to, say, type a tweet or something, and there's that 1 or 2 second delay for the keyboard to pop up. This app, keep it on your homepage, press the icon, and you're typing like a second later. Like, you almost cannot believe how quick the app pops up in the keyboard. There's no pressing the screen, waiting for the keyboard to pop up. The keyboard's already up, ready for you to type in your note, hit send, and it's off. No filling out who you're sending it to or subject or anything. And that's all it does. And it does have an archive feature where you can click one part of the screen to see all your past notes if you need to. But the idea is just basically quickly to send yourself an email note. So again, if you're somebody who lives in your email inbox, that's where you keep track of what you need to do, or you like to send yourself reminders, this is the app to do that.
Yeah, that's actually really cool, because I've even, you know, in the past sent myself emails before I started using syncing services like Simple Note. But yeah, the one tap send, that's priceless.
Yeah, like you, I'd used to do the same thing. I used to do everything in my inbox. Now I have a more elaborate system, but I know other people will do it. So if you're looking for a quick way to do it, this is the app. And it's either 99 cents or $1.99.
Right now it's actually free.
Oh, is it?
It says it's free. So
I did not know that.
It is ad supported, so it's free. Pretty neat.
Cool.
All right. Well, I think it's a good thing that you've been spelling out those apps, because we've had feedback about, you know, it's a good thing that we help spell out those apps sometimes. People are listening, and some of the developers have very creative names, and it's helpful when we spell it out so people can download these pretty nice apps that we continue to recommend.
Yeah, I used to try to spell them out, but I've actually had a few listeners email to remind me as well. So I will try to remember, but it's worth pointing out again, if I'm talking too fast or spelling badly or forget to spell it, all of this information is available at the iPhonePodcast.com. There's show notes for every episode with App Store links right to all the stuff we talk about. And I've been kind of sprucing up and working on that site all the time, so it's becoming more and more useful. I have a few more features in mind that'll be out in the near future. So if you're listening to this podcast, you should at least every once in a while check out the iPhonePodcast.com. And I will quickly just say, I guess there's two apps in the App Store called Noted. This one's actually has a fuller, longer name. It's Noted Fast Notes Emailed to You, and it isn't free. It is $1.99 with no ads. So
that's the app. I looked at the wrong one.
Yeah. So that's the problem too. There's so many apps that have variations of the same name. So it's Noted Fast Notes Emailed to You.
Okay, this one looks a lot better than the one I just downloaded.
Yeah, it's nice.
Okay. Well, once again, thank you to everyone for listening to the iPhone Podcast. A friendly reminder, please take the time to rate us in iTunes. You can follow the show and provide feedback by visiting theiPhonePodcast.com or by following us on Twitter. I am located at twitter.com/iPhoneInCanada, and Justin is located at twitter.com/JustinLouis. That's L-U-E-Y for Louis. Thanks again for listening to episode 41. We will see you next week for episode 42.